Our second case is number 56360, Cardenas versus Antonio Cardenas versus State. Ms. Bessemer for the appellant. Again, Mr. Plater for the respondent. And I understand no reply brief was filed in this matter, so the... Bessemer for the appellant.
Good morning, Justices, Counsel. I'm Janet Bessemer representing Antonio Cardenas. Antonio is convicted of second-degree murder with the use of a deadly weapon. What makes this case special is that there were three people in the car. This was a drive-by shooting, and there were three people in the car. The night that they were arrested, well, the next day after the shooting, all three boys made statements that said Antonio did it. But the next day, Antonio's brother, who was also charged in the shooting, made a statement that he did it. And Antonio, a couple days later, made a statement that the brother did it also. The brother's name is Lewis. And in this case, the physical evidence was scant, but the physical evidence showed or leaned towards showing Lewis did the shooting as opposed to Antonio doing the shooting, because it was DNA evidence, and there was Lewis's DNA on the gun and not Antonio's, and there was no relevant fingerprint evidence. What I'd like the court to consider in this case is the district attorney's adamant refusal to let in at Antonio's trial Lewis's statements that Lewis did it. And then in Lewis's trial, the district attorney used those same statements in its case in chief. And I've argued that in the Woods case that was before this court, the court said that you can't use a witness in a prosecution case and then later turn around in a defense case and say that witness is unreliable.
Is that affected by the fact that in Lewis's case it was under the admission of a party opponent hearsay exception that the statements came in, whereas when offered in Antonio's case it was offered as an admission against penal interest?
I haven't argued that there was a violation of the rules of hearsay in this case.
No, I mean your Woods argument. Is it affected by the hearsay exception under which the piece of evidence came in? There's no necessary trustworthiness associated with the admission of a party. So your Woods analysis is troubling to me, because admitting it against Lewis in Lewis's case is the admission of a defendant and using his own statement against him. When you want to take that statement over and put it into Antonio's case, it's a different story, because it's not under that exception to the hearsay rule that it's being offered. And I don't see that fact pattern in Woods. And that's the trouble I have with your argument, just to be very direct.
I don't have an answer.
Okay. Thank you for being equally direct.
Sorry.
Appreciate it. Do you follow what I'm asking?
Sort of. But I don't have an answer. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Please continue. I didn't mean to.
Actually, other than that issue, I'd prefer to submit this case on the briefs. The one issue is the one that I felt was warranting argument on. So if that's okay, I'll submit it on the briefs.
Certainly. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Plater.
Ms. Bessemer, I did have another question.
Go ahead.
Before Mr. Plater, on the completeness of the additional statement, you raised an argument as to Antonio's August statement being admitted, and then under the rule of completeness that the September statement to follow should have come in. Could you address that argument as well?
Just that under the applicable rule of evidence, The second statement could have come in if it was part of the first statement. And there's two ways to get there. One is by saying that it was part of the first statement and should have come in for that reason. The second is to fiddle with the rule of evidence and follow the federal rule, which would have allowed it in. That's all I have to say.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Now, Mr. Plater.
May it please the court, counsel. Again, Joe Plater for the state of Nevada. Mr. Cardenas was convicted of second-degree murder with the use of a deadly weapon. And at trial, he did not testify, but he, through his lawyer, brought in his brother to testify. His brother testified that he, Luis, was the shooter and that Antonio was the driver of the car. We don't think it makes any difference under the theories of liability that we pleaded. But the argument here presented is that the district court erred, abused its discretion in not allowing Antonio to present his brother Luis's prior statements that he had made after the shooting to police officers. And he wanted to introduce these statements at trial because Luis, at one time, after the killing had occurred, said, "I was the shooter, my brother was the driver," even though he said just the opposite on another occasion to police officers after the murder. So the district court had a hearing, and it made certain findings of fact. And generally, the rule is that prior consistent statements, which they were trying to introduce, Luis's prior consistent statements, are inadmissible hearsay. There is an exception when you're trying to rehabilitate a witness after he's been accused of recent fabrication. But this court has held that in order to introduce prior consistent statements, they have to have been made in a situation where there was no motive to fabricate. And that's where the district court had its problem. It said, I think they were made in a situation where there's a great deal of motive to fabricate. And the district court specifically said, here are the following reasons I have to find that there was a motive to fabricate those statements. And they are that Antonio had told the police that he was the shooter. Luis had also told the police that Antonio was the shooter. And it was only after the murder and after Antonio was arrested and after Antonio's mom was mad at Luis for having told the police that Antonio was the shooter that Luis then went to the police and said, well, you know what, I'm really the shooter now because my brother can't do the time. When you consider all of those things, the district court found, and evidently with a very rational basis, said he made those statements when he had a motive to fabricate, so they're not admissible under the Runyon case. In Runyon, the court was considering a first-degree murder conviction and attempted murder. And in that case, at trial, the defendant asserted self-defense, and he wanted his girlfriend to testify that he had told her just 3 or 4 days after the murder that he had killed one of the victims in self-defense. He tried to proffer that testimony to the trial court, and the trial court said, no, I think there's a motive to fabricate, and this court upheld the trial court's use of discretion because this court found that once the killing occurred, there was an automatic motive to fabricate the statement, and therefore the trial court didn't abuse its discretion. That same ruling and principle applies in this case, and it applies with greater force in this case because we see all the different facts where Luis had a motive to fabricate, and so the district court could not have clearly abused its discretion.
He did testify at Antonio's trial.
Luis did testify,
yeah, and he said,
which
he
is
did.
Another point that
he said he did it.
Right. Well, Luis said I was the shooter,
right,
and Antonio was the driver. So, even if the trial court had abused its discretion in not allowing Luis's statements in at that trial, he really didn't suffer any prejudice because, as you say, Luis came in anyways, and he said I was the shooter, just like they were trying to get in through his prior statements. As well, Moise testified. He was the third person in the car. Moise came in and testified Luis was the shooter and Antonio was the driver. So there's no prejudice. There was no abuse of discretion.
What about Wood? Ms. Bessemer's argument on Wood?
Well, in Wood, this court held that the state can't take a witness and rely on the veracity of that witness's statements. In other words, present a certain witness as being completely credible and then turn around in a different trial and say that witness is completely uncredible, not believable. That just violates due process. That didn't occur in this case.
So they didn't argue. The final argument on behalf of the state was not that Luis was lying, that Antonio was the shooter. They went and said that he was a principal accessory, that Antonio was an accessory.
Well, the evidence points both ways. It points that he's either he can be the principal or he was an aider and abettor.
But in Lewis's trial, they used Lewis's statement to convict Lewis.
Oh, absolutely.
The point is that that's unfair under Wood.
We impeached Lewis when he got on the stand in Antonio's trial and said he was the driver, or he was the shooter, because Lewis's testimony was used to show that Antonio had no idea that there was even a rifle in the car. And if that's true, then we have serious questions of liability. What are you really liable for? If you have no idea that there was a gun in the car, then perhaps you weren't aiding and abetting, and you weren't the shooter. So it was used to impeach the idea that there was no crime that occurred. At least there was no first degree murder that it had occurred. Now, as to the use of Antonio's subsequent statement that he tried to get in a trial, what happened was right after the murder, he talked to police and he said he was the shooter. And he said that on August 27th, 2009. It was about 5 days later on October 1st when he was talking to the police again. And he said, I wasn't the shooter, I was the driver. And he wanted to admit that second statement into trial to show that he was only a driver and not the shooter. And the district court said, no, that doesn't come under the rule that you get to admit part of one statement in fairness, because that's actually a subsequent separate statement that our rule doesn't cover. It's NRS 47.120, and it says by its terms that whenever one party introduces a statement, the other party can introduce any other relevant part of the same statement in fairness that ought to be considered. Well, by its terms then, the statute only applies to one writing. And what he was trying to do was introduce a wholly separate writing that occurred some days later. By the terms of the statute, it's not admissible. Now, the federal rule, as Ms. Bessemer refers to, allows subsequent or separate writings or statements to be introduced at the time that the first statement is introduced. But that's not what our rule says. And this court has held that when certain language of a federal rule is excluded in our own statute, the legislature has acted deliberately in excluding that particular part. We've cited various cases around the country where courts hold similarly to the way the district court ruled in this case. So it didn't. The district court didn't abuse its discretion in that fashion. And unless there's any other questions, we'd ask you to affirm the judgment of conviction.
Thank you. You have a question? Thank you to both counsel. This matter will stand submitted.